Thank you for the introduction and also for the invitation and the opportunity to speak here about this long title. So I tried to put many words in it, but what the talk will be about is indeed generalized LTB models, and generalized in the sense that they will include quantum corrections. And we want to relate them, or in a sense embed them, in spherical symmetric models which also include quantum corrections. And in the first part, I will basically talk about the formalism, how this can be done for quite a broad class of generic models. And in the second part, then talk about applications of this formalism. And this is joint work with a postdoc in Erlangen, Hongan Lui, a master's student of mine, Eric Luit, a PhD student of mine, Stefan Weigel, and Param Singh from Louisiana State University. So why are we interested in this work? So this formalism allows, in a sense, to describe quantum black hole models. And in our field at the moment, and also in earlier years, a lot of people contributed to the question, what is basically changing if we add quantum to the black hole? And this talk, in a sense, goes in that direction and will apply also to some of the models, or we can embed some of the models which are already there in the literature, also in this formalism. And what we are interested in is, in a sense, the dynamical formulation of the gravitational collapse, and models which describe this are so-called LTB models, which is a spherically symmetric model including dust. And one of the famous models in this context is the Oppenheimer-Snyder collapse, where you basically assume a homogeneous dust profile. And this is something which people then would like to move to the quantum theory and see what changes if we add quantum corrections to Oppenheimer-Snyder. And I'm talking about quantum corrections, but the entire formalism I will talk about today considers effective models. I will say a few words later what I exactly mean by these models. And these are, in a sense, still models which we can treat with classical techniques, but they include quantum corrections. And some of them, depending on how I choose them, are motivated from loop quantum gravity. But in principle, the formalism also allows to consider different or more general quantum corrections. And in this way, we can also connect, in a sense, a bit to modified gravity. And the aim of this work was to look at those corrections from a broad perspective and do not consider one particular model and then analyze, consider the next model, but find a kind of way where we can investigate a broad class of models with the same techniques. And the plan of my talk will be as follows. First, I will briefly review how the classical LTB model can be embedded, in a sense, in a spherical symmetric model, and I want to explain what I mean by this embedding. And this will yield to a so-called LTB condition, which we impose at the classical level. And then in the next step, want to lift to these quantum corrected models and see whether we can also implement an LTB condition at that level. And this formalism basically aims to do that. And once I have introduced the formalism, I will discuss a few applications which then link to already existing models and also compare the properties of these models, and finally summarize and conclude. So let's start with the classical LTB model. Since we are mainly interested in LQG-inspired correction, we will consider the LTB model in terms of Ashtekar variables, and then reduce to the situation of spherical symmetry, where we can parametrize the Ashtekar connection and its conjugate momentum, the densitized triad, in terms of extrinsic curvature variables, here denoted as kx, k phi, beta is the Emersi parameter, and the densitized triad variables are denoted as ex and e phi here. And when we implement the Gauss constraint after imposing spherical symmetry, we can basically end up with a set of two variables where we have the extrinsic curvature kx and k phi and the corresponding conjugate triads, which build a canonical conjugate pair. And because we want to look at dust solutions, we also introduced one dust degree of freedom encoded here in T and PT. Now, if we write the spherically symmetric metric in terms of triads in the most general form, it still has an arbitrary lapse, an arbitrary shift vector, and then the triad and basically enters in this form. And if we compare this to the Lemaître-Tolman-Bondi solution, we realize it's a solution where the lapse needs to be equal to one, where the shift vector is vanishing, and where we have a relation between E phi and Ex of this form here. And this curly Ex here is the so-called LTB function, which enters when you solve the Einstein equations for spherical symmetry with dust. And this can be interpreted as the energy of a dust shell at coordinate X here, radial coordinate X. And this independent triad in the LTB case, Ex, satisfies this equation of motion here. So if we compare these two metrics, we see if we have a relation between X prime and E phi in this way, including the LTB function, then we basically obtain from this metric the LTB metric. And I forgot to say the second arbitrary function f of x here in the equation of motion for Ex can be interpreted as the mass of a sphere of radius r of x. Yeah, so these are the two functions which enter the LTB solution. So this means if we impose this Gx condition here, in addition to the dust time gauge, which will yield us n equal to 1, we have, in a sense, two gauge fixing conditions. And imposing them on a generic spherical symmetric metric with dust, we end up with the LTB, LTB metric. And it turns out that this condition Gx, which I call the LTB condition at the classical level, can be understood as a gauge fixing for the diffeomorphism constraint. Yeah, so basically, this is a gauge fixing for the Hamiltonian. The LTB condition, a gauge fixing for the diffeomorphism constraint, and then you end up with the LTB sector that you would like to look at. Now the question is, can we perform the same steps in effective models? And in effective models, we basically change the dynamics. So if we quantize in loop quantum gravity, many of you know, we use holonomy and fluxes. Which are basically different operators than the X and P, or here the K phi and E phi. And in order to encode the kind of holonomy effects and also effects which come from quantizing the inverse volume in full LQG, these effective models include so-called polymerizations, which on the one hand mimic that we quantize with holonomies. So for instance, instead of k phi in an effective model, we would use some function of k phi. And here the sine function is the most simple function we can think of, which mimics a bit the holonomy quantization. But in general, we could replace our k phi variable by some function which can depend on all phase space variables, with the requirement that if we send our parameter which controls the quantum corrections, which I call polymerization parameter and which I call alpha here, if I send this to zero, I end up with the classical expression. And similarly for the inverse triad corrections, which basically mean we quantize inverse triad operators, we include different functions H1 and H2 here, which can be functions of Ex, and basically mimic the effect that we have to quantize these kind of things, for example, via the way we do in the Hamiltonian constraint and loop quantum gravity. Now, of course, you can say these are arbitrary functions, so you have a huge set of models, which is true. But we already restrict a little bit the kind of functions that we want to choose. And one restriction comes from the quantum theory, where we basically usually use a function-preserving quantization, which means if we quantize, let's say, X as multiplication operators, we would quantize a function of X as the function of this multiplication operator. And we want to keep that in the polymerization choice as well in order to mimic this also at the effective level.
So why is it called polymerization?
It's a bit different in the literature. So often it's only called polymerization because when you choose it, you regularize in a sense your operators in terms of holonomies. And then people would say choosing sine x instead of x is a kind of regularization, and then they call it polymerization. But I will really use it here because it depends. If you take expectation values of these operators, it will depend on a parameter here, which is alpha, which is, for instance, the Planck length. And if I send this to zero, I expect to get the classical expression. And that's a bit the notion people use. You could also call it holonomy corrections if you like. But in principle, since I allow this to be depending on the triads as well, it's a bit more general.
Maybe Jan was just asking what have polymers to
do? Yeah, yeah.
Ah, because of polymer hidden. Yeah. Maybe, yeah, but. Yeah.
I forgot actually.
I'm not sure, but.
It's been forgotten.
Okay, okay.
But in principle, the standard would be here a holonomy correction and inverse triad corrections, and altogether I would call polymerizations,
okay,
if you like. And next, we only polymerize or modify, in a sense, the Hamiltonian constraint. We keep the classical diffeomorphism constraint, which is, in a sense, a strong assumption, because when we quantize the full theory, at least we have a quantization of finite diffeomorphisms. So we are a bit classical, more classical than if we would quantize everything. I will explain later why we do this, because it simplifies a lot of things that we require, but in principle, this is something which enters into our model. Furthermore, since we use the dust time gauge, it's a temporal gauge fixed model once we do this. And in this model, we then want to implement the LTB condition. So we have temporal gauge fixing already, go to the effective level, and then want to implement the gauge fixing related to the LTB condition. And of course, since we changed the dynamics, in general, the classical LTB condition will not be preserved as a gauge fixing condition. And therefore, we allow this to be modified in order to get consistent dynamics and in order to, in a sense, gauge fix consistently at the effective level. And also, in this direction, learn something about how we can gauge fix maybe at the quantum level later. And as I said, because we do not specify H1, H2, and F here, we can later link to a broad class of models. So this is the model that we will work in. So we have a polymerized or quantum corrected Hamiltonian constraint, which I call C delta. Here you see again the inverse triad corrections. In our work, basically, we chose F slightly differently, such that we have as a correction 1 plus F. And 1 means we get the classical constraint plus some corrections. So in this notation, we require in the classical limit that F vanishes, and then we end up with the classical Hamiltonian constraint. You see it's a function of all the elementary variables, kx, kphi, ephi, and ex. And now, in a sense, we want to modify it with F, h1, and h2. And want to see how we have to modify also the LTB condition in order to make sure that the LTB condition is preserved under these modified dynamics. Now, since we didn't polymerize the Hamiltonian the diffeomorphism constraint, by construction we have that even if we modify C to C delta, the algebra or the Poisson bracket between the modified Hamiltonian constraint and the classical spatial diffeomorphism just gives us the correct relation. And that's one reason why we use this assumption, because it really simplifies when we check the algebra of these individual parts here entering into the partially gauge fixed Hamiltonian. So the first thing we looked at was to consider those models for which this partially gauge fixed Hamiltonian is preserving C delta. This is not the same as requiring that the Hamiltonian constraint algebra is preserved, because we already partially gauge fixed. Yeah, if we also gauge fix the diff U, this would be the physical Hamiltonian, but we are in a sense in between these two steps. So it's not something, if we drop this assumption that we violate the constraint algebra, which you need to check at the completely gauge unfixed level, but it's an assumption where this C delta is then conserved under the effective dynamics. And if you do this for the generic ansatz we had for C delta, you get some conditions between the inverse triad corrections and the polymerization functions. So these F, which I was showing before here in the modification of the Hamiltonian constraint, can always be written in terms of a sum of two Fs, which I called F1 and F2 here, which then show up in the polymerization of the Hamiltonian here in this form. And what we also get from this requirement is that it's not allowed to have a Kx polymerization. So this C delta will only include quantum corrections for the key K phi variable, which in general can still depend on Ex, but K phi will stay as it is in the classical case. If you drop that assumption, you can also allow modifications in this direction. If we then compute the Poisson bracket of two modified C deltas for two different Lebesgue functions, the algebra is in a sense closed. We get the diffeomorphism constraint, but it's modified because it depends on the polymerization function F2 here. So for instance, if you choose a sine polymerization, you get a cosine function here. Okay, so this is a class of models which already restricts the way we can modify C delta. And of course, this carries then also over when we consider the LTB condition later on. So let us take two examples because it's maybe a lot of notation and quite inexplicit. So this is the standard polymerization you use in LQC models. So for F1, we choose a sine polymerization of K phi and it enters squared because K phi enters squared in this term. And then we have a second choice. It's also a sine function, but it comes with a factor of 2 here, which is important. And then we have no inverse triad corrections, meaning we're choosing the two H functions equal to 1. This is a model which was already in the literature long ago by Tibri Vala. And also the factor of 2 here is very important because it exactly ensures that we satisfy this condition here. If you insert H1, H2, and the corresponding F function, which means the C delta is a conserved quantity in this model. Now, let's take a second example, which was basically taken from a paper of Martin Bojowald and his collaborators, where he, which is basically the seminal paper where they asked this question, whether the LTB condition can be implemented at the effective level. And if you consider the choices there, you have basically F1, which consists of H1, which is a generic function of the EX triad. F2 is again a sine function. And then H1 is an inverse triad correction, and this difference of the square roots is basically what you would expect if you consider the eigenvalues of the volume operator. And that's why this kind of function was chosen. And this is a model in which you can check that the condition that we had here for C delta to be conserved is not satisfied. And you can see this very easily. If you insert all these functions, you realize that on the right-hand side, H1 is a function of the triads only, but also the extrinsic curvature enters. And this doesn't fit basically the left-hand side. So therefore, this condition is violated and the Poisson bracket is not closed in this sense. And we will see that this has, in a sense, the consequence that the LTB condition needs to be modified in a much more complicated way than in models where this is the algebra is closing. So this was the conservation of the geometric part of the Hamiltonian constraint. Now let's consider the aim to implement the LTB condition. We consider now again the situation that we don't require C delta to be conserved, so we keep it completely open. And we modify this LTB gauge fixing, where this is basically the classical part here, and then C delta includes the LTB function and which I call theta here, it should be curly A of x, sorry. And it can depend in principle on all phase space variables and all orders of their derivatives. And this is basically an ansatz we plug into the effective dynamics and then look what kind of form this modified LTB condition can have in order to be consistent, and consistent means preserved under these effective dynamics. So what you would basically do is consider the Poisson bracket of the effective Hamiltonian in this condition, which gives you a rather complicated expression. So what we were looking at is rather the equations of motions of the generic effective model, and then asking how does g delta of x needs to look like such that these four independent equations which I have in the generic spherical symmetric sector reduce to only two. Which means if I manage to do that, I'm in the LTB sector. If in addition the shift vanishes, the diffeo is satisfied and this LTB condition is preserved. And if you do that, one realizes the first restriction we get is that such a generic LTB condition will not depend on these higher order derivatives. This is excluded. And it can always be written in a form where it splits into two parts, where one part is rather related to the non-marginally bound case, where this curly E is non-vanishing. And a second part is related to the marginally bound case, where curly E is zero. And given this form, you can ask, what are the further restrictions? And also here, even if we don't require C delta to be conserved, where we got this requirement that the Kx polymerization cannot be allowed, we get a similar restriction here. So for the non-marginally bound case, where basically G1 is relevant, we get that no polymerization of Kx is allowed. And in the marginally bound case, where G2 is relevant, we basically get also this result if J2 is of this form, which means it seems rather generic or for a lot of models that these Kx corrections are excluded by the assumptions that we took. And one explanation could be that the strong assumption that we keep the classical diffeo might be a reason why we get this. Now, if you compare to the classical LTB condition, a polymerized form where you can basically factor out the LTB function square root of 1 plus curly E times a function which can depend on K phi and Kx here in this form, which includes the quantum correction, is quite convenient. And if you require such a form, then the stability requirement basically tells you that this G delta function can only depend on the triad Ex, and this G delta function needs to have satisfied this condition, which again relates the LTB condition to the choice of polymerization. Now, if you remember when we had the conservation of C delta, we had a similar expression here, and this was related to some combination of inverse triad functions, which I'm showing here below. And therefore, if this is given, it doesn't mean C delta is conserved. But if we in addition require that this is equal to the right-hand side here, which is that one, we basically get this additional condition, and if the two are satisfied, we have models where C delta is conserved. And in these models, a special class of LTB conditions is where we have no quantum corrections in the LTB condition, but in the Hamiltonian. And this means this C delta twiddle is just one. So we just have the classical LTB function here. And then the condition simplifies, and we just have a relation between the two polymerization functions and their derivatives, and between the inverse triad corrections. So for instance, in the model that we had before, where we chose H1 and H2 equal to 1 because there were no inverse triad corrections, then this equation is still consistent because this second part drops out. So let me also here go back to the two examples so that you get an idea how these functions can look like. Again, we use our sine polymerization squared for the first function and factor of 2 for the second function. No inverse triad corrections, then one can easily check that these two conditions, the compatibility as well as the conservation, are satisfied. So this means we have as a compatible LTB condition the classical one, and we also have a conserved C delta. So this means the quantum gauge fixing is in this sense commuting with the classical gauge fixing because I'm using exactly the same expression. Now, in general, this will not happen. And here is again the model by Bojewald et al., where we choose again these more complicated F1 function, including basically the sine squared, but also some EX dependence, and these two non-vanishing triad corrections. And then you can play the same game and you can ask what is the condition for C, G delta 1 such that it's stable under the effective dynamics, which we get if we insert these kind of polymerizations. And you see this yields a nonlinear equation here for G delta 1, which we were not able to solve analytically, but you can solve this numerically. Now, in the paper by Bojewald et al., they basically looked separately at these corrections. So they had one model where only holonomy corrections were switched on, and H1 and H2 were 1. And they had a second model where there were no holonomy corrections, but inverse triad corrections. Then these equations simplify, and in some cases, you can even solve them analytically. But it gives us already a hint if you violate the condition that C delta is preserved. Usually, the LTB condition might get much more complicated, and this is something which you need to take care of when you want to implement this at the effective level. Okay, now I would like to consider a specific class where additional conditions are satisfied, which I will then also use later in the talk for the applications. And since we want to link to LTB models and quantum black hole models, there is a class which is interesting in this aspect because it's a class in which the equations of motions for the radial coordinates completely decouple. Yeah, so you have a 1 plus 1 dimensional field theory, but your equations of motions do not contain derivatives with respect to the spatial coordinate, with respect to the radial coordinate. And this means that the equations you have to solve are on the one hand simpler, and on the other hand, if we think about LTB models, it means the shells decouple completely from each other. And this is what happens at the classical level in LTB coordinates. And having a model which also reflects this at the effective model is in this sense quite interesting to analyze. And some models in the literature which considered quantizations or effective versions of LTB model were assuming this kind of assumption that each shell decouples from each other, even at the effective or at the quantum level. And at least at the effective level, you can now use this formalism and say under which assumptions this is given. And this is again a model in which the C delta is conserved and the LTB function is of this form that I can factor out the square root of 1 plus curly E of X. So it's a bit the cases I was discussing before. Okay, before I move on to applications, maybe I ask whether there are questions up to now. Okay, this seems not to the case, then let me continue. So what is now the general strategy? At the moment, you can say we played around with a lot of F functions and required stability and then found some conditions among these different polymerization functions, and I would say that's correct. But now we want to use the results in order to build up some physical models, and exactly the last class of models I was talking about were everything decouples along the radial coordinate are quite interesting in order to link LTB models to their underlying spherical symmetric model. And this was corollary 4 in the paper we wrote, so I will refer to this result by corollary 4 here also in the talk. And it basically means that we can start with an LQC model for each x, for each radial coordinate. We can include quantum corrections at the level of the cosmological model. So for instance, we can choose a sign polymerization. And then we have this condition among the inverse triad corrections and among the polymerization functions. And given one polymerization at the level of each x radial coordinate, we can use these conditions in order to determine the other polymerization functions and build up the underlying spherically symmetric model. And this is, in a sense, quite nice because many models, which I was citing on the first page, also take cosmological models as a starting point and often then match it to some vacuum models when they consider the dust collapse of a star. And here, in a sense, you can use this formalism in order to analyze all these kind of models using the same techniques. And this makes also the comparison maybe a little bit easier in for some class of models because you can just read off what the corresponding inverse triad corrections and functions are, and then these conditions are always the same, and you can see what kind of properties these models satisfy. And moreover, often these models consider different coordinates. And as I said, our analysis started at the Hamiltonian level, so therefore we have, in a sense, gauged fixed time and fixed the Hamiltonian evolution. But for this subclass of models, which has no inverse triad corrections and decouples at the radial coordinate level, we can also link it to an underlying covariant Lagrangian of extended mimetic gravity and therefore link it, in a sense, to modified gravity, and then can also use this to transform, to do generic coordinate transformations, because if the underlying covariant Lagrangian exists, we are also able to gauge unfix our temporal gauge fixing. Okay, so let's look at a specific model. As I said, we want to use an LQC model for the radial, for each radial coordinate, and we use the APS model of Hasteka, Pawlowski, and Singh, where the basic variables are basically the volume, which is the third power over two of our triad here, and it's a mu bar scheme, so we consider not k phi, but k phi divided by square root of ex. And the polymerization parameter, which I called alpha, is here related to the minimal area, which I call delta. And beta is the Yamirzi parameter again. So now you can, from corollary 4, get directly the dynamics, basically, of this LQC model, which has here a sign polymerization and the temporal, the equation of motion for the conjugate variable B is of this form. And you see up to here it's valid for the marginally bound and non-marginally bound case. So in the marginally bound case, we would basically set this curly EX to zero. Now, since we have this relation among the polymerization functions, we can read off from here F1 and then basically determine F2, the inverse triad corrections, and the compatible LTB condition, which, when we go from the underlying spherical symmetric model and apply these compatible LTB condition, we should get exactly the decoupled LQC model. And if we do this, we get this spherical symmetric model here, which is exactly the one which Tibivala introduced, where you see it's exactly these two polymerizations, sine squared, and the sine with a factor of 2. And we have already checked for that model that C delta is conserved. So the reconstruction, in a sense, is consistent. And we can also read off that we have no inverse triad corrections in this model. As we saw before, it's a model where the classical LTB condition is a compatible one, which means it's preserved under these modified dynamics. So that will basically set up the model. And if we apply G delta X, we will get our LTB model that we might be interested in. So now we can write the LTB metric in terms of the LTB variable R, which is in our case just the square root of the densitized triad here. And we can use these two equations of motion shown here to write it as in LQC as a modified Friedmann equation for capital R, which is shown here. And you see if you switch off, for instance, curly E, this is the standard LQC modified Friedmann equation. And if you have the non-marginally bound case, this will be related to some curvature in the cosmological model. But let's specialize to the marginally bound case where curly E is equal to zero. Then this equation is quite simple so that you can analytically integrate it. And you get this solution here, which looks very much similar to the classical LTB solution, up to one effect or one term here, the polymerization parameter alpha, which, as I said, in LQC would be related to the minimal area. And if you set this equal to zero, you get exactly the classical LTB condition. Now, this f of x here is basically chosen in accordance with the dust profile that we would like to consider in an LTB model. So this can vary from x to x, or in principle can be constant. And if you choose it to be the Schwarzschild radius, you will recover the Schwarzschild solution if you also set alpha equal to zero. And this was already in the literature by other people who basically considered this for homogeneous dust profiles, so for where f of x is in a sense constant, but the solution is also valid for arbitrary inhomogeneous dust profiles. So now we want to specialize to the vacuum case, in which case C delta vanishes. And if we do this, we basically, maybe I'm jumping here. Oh yeah, no, I wanted to say, in a sense, two more properties here, sorry. So if we look at these solutions, you see it's a modified Friedmann equation. You, in a sense, expect a bounce. And this is exactly what also happens if we look at the solution in LTB coordinates. And this in particular means if we specialize to homogeneous dust profiles and consider the Oppenheimer-Schneider collapse, then we don't get shell crossing singularities. We just get a symmetric bounce. And there was some discussion, in a sense, in the literature for people who looked at these quantum Oppenheimer-Schneider collapse models, whether there are shell crossing singularities, whether we need to use weak solutions, or whether we have a bounce. And coming from LTB coordinates, this is basically what we obtain in this model. And similar to other models who looked at these quantum-corrected LTB models, horizons can form. But there is a minimal mass at which this is happening. And this is also related to the polymerization parameter here. And all these groups basically get for the kind of models they are looking at the same mass, the same critical mass threshold. So this is also consistent with what was already in the literature. Okay, now let's specialize to the polymerized vacuum case where we choose F to be the Schwarzschild radius and constant for each radial coordinate. If we look back to the solution here, we basically have a beta twiddle of X. Now, if curly Fx still depends on X, I cannot rescale beta without somehow incorporating the rescaling also in curly F. But if f is constant, I can do this. And then this is, in a sense, just a residual diffeomorphism. And I can always choose beta of x to be x. and then introduce the variable z as x minus t, and then we see in the vacuum case the solution just depends on z, and even in a squared form, which means on the one hand that it doesn't depend on the sine of z, because we have the quadratic dependence here. And similar to if we set alpha equal to 0, as I said, we can rediscover the standard Schwarzschild solutions, but in LTB coordinates. Now, since the quantum corrections show up in these polymerization parameters, we looked at the curvature invariant. So for the Kretschmer scalar shown here on the right-hand side, and as well also for the Ricci scalar here, we see now at z equal to 0, that's where the bounce is happening in this variable, nothing serious happens because we have our alpha corrections here in the denominator, which means that it's finite and bounded. And we also see that it's different to the classical case, because if we have a non-vanishing alpha, then the Ricci is non-vanishing here. Which is not the case for vacuum solutions in the classical case.
So now you have about 10 minutes.
Okay, thanks. So motivated from this deviation here from the classical theory, we were wondering whether this model can also be related to an underlying covariant model. And the model which people have shown to be able to relate to a certain choice of polymerizations are so-called extended mimetic gravity models, which include, next to the metric, two other fields, phi, which they call the mimetic field, and lambda, which wants the mimetic condition, which is the last part here in the action, which is basically forcing or could be understood like a non-rotational dust part of the action. Yeah? So it's a kind of condition which is used to temporal gauge fix the mimetic model, and then phi, the mimetic field, becomes the clock. And in addition to the standard Einstein-Hilbert term, one has higher order derivatives in the so-called mimetic potential, which I denoted by L phi here, which includes second order derivatives of the mimetic field contracted in a particular way. And how they are contracted, of course, depends on how many chi fields are entering in the model. And of course, also this is because we have the trace here and the contraction. This is a coupling between the metric degrees of freedom and the mimetic field. Now people have shown, although this is quite a complicated modified action, that it only includes 2 plus 1 additional independent degrees of freedom, two sitting coming from gravity and one in a sense from the mimetic field. And those people here basically ask the question, is there a spherical symmetric model of extended mimetic gravity, such that we can write down a generic potential, which in this case only includes two variables, chi 1 and chi 2, such that if we choose this mimetic potential in a certain way and we perform the Legendre transformation of this model, we end up with a polymerized spherical symmetric model. So, which means that choosing this mimetic potential here in a certain way will yield you the polymerization functions in the canonical theory I was talking about before. And if you consider the modified Einstein equations that come out of extended mimetic gravity, then you have the standard Einstein tensor here. You have some additional contribution, which I put here on the left-hand side, coming from the higher order derivative coupling, which I call T phi mu nu. And you have this lambda here involved, which if you interpret this really as a kind of non-rotational dust action, the lambda would take the interpretation of the dust energy. And if you send this to zero, which would be the vacuum case that we were looking at before, you still have corrections here from the mimetic field, and this is the reason why also the Ricci is different here than in the classical case. Okay, now since time is running, I will skip this, but in principle you can choose the mimetic potential here in terms of variables which we call x and y, related to the extrinsic curvature such that you really get the polymerization of our model. So this is in a sense then the underlying covariant model I was talking about. And this means we can redo our temporal gauge fixing. And if we have a link to a mimetic model, it also means that in the classical case, we were choosing dust time gauge. Now, having this underlying covariant Lagrangian, the mimetic field is the clock. And due to this mimetic potential, it has a much more complicated dynamics with gravity. And therefore, going to the effective level in this sense also changes the clock and makes it more complicated. Okay, so let me briefly compare with existing models. So if we consider this polymerized vacuum solution, which is a solution of one of these extended mimetic models in spherical symmetry, then many other models were working in Schwarzschild coordinates. But since we can gauge unfixed, we can now go to Schwarzschild coordinates and look how this solution looks like. And what we end up with is a Schwarzschild-like solution, which has the standard Schwarzschild term, plus some corrections, which again depend on the polymerization parameter, which are exactly the corrections also many other people got in their models. So where they usually didn't have a model which could be formulated like an initial value problem, but often started with an LQC model and then matched to vacuum space times, and then got these modifications of Schwarzschild, and we can now come to the same model from a different perspective. Although this Schwarzschild-like solution here is valid for all r larger than zero, to perform this transformation is only well-defined for r being larger than the minimal r, which is basically related to the minimal r we have in the LTB model. So, which means we in a sense cannot cover all values R can have here just from looking at the metric, but the coordinate transformation restricts this. So the second model we wanted to compare with is a quantum Oppenheimer-Schneider model, which was done by the New Brunswick group. And their model was formulated in Gulstrand-Pandeve coordinates, and they didn't use an LTB gauge fixing condition. They basically used the aerial gauge. And by doing this, they used this also as a gauge fixing for the diffeomorphism, which is a different kind of gauge fixing than using the LTB condition. And the stability then yields to a certain form of the shift vector, here denoted as nr, which is given by this form. And also here you see that the form of the shift vector basically has an effect from the polymerization. Now, because we have the underlying spherical symmetric model, we don't need to apply the LTB condition. We can also apply this gauge fixing, and then we match exactly their dynamics in GP coordinates, which is of this form, where you see it looks a bit more complicated than the decoupled equations we have in the LTB coordinates. However, it means people were asking a little bit in the literature, given their model, how looks the underlying gauge unfixed model with respect to the aerial gauge? And this formalism basically provides the model, because if we apply it, we exactly end up with their gauge fixed model. So now, what are the properties of these different models and also choosing these different coordinates? And if we now transform our LTB solution to GP coordinates by just choosing little r to be r of x of t, then our shift vector looks different, and it's just the temporal derivative of our r coordinate here in LTB, of our radius in LTB coordinates, which means if we have a bouncing solution, it basically shrinks until the bounce and then becomes zero and expands after the bounce, which means that the sign of the shift vector is basically related to the dynamics of R here. And the model allows a sign change in the shift vector. And this is even smooth because it's a smooth, it's a smooth bounce. It's a solution where we don't have a discontinuity in the shift vector. If you work in the aerial gauge and in GP coordinates, this is not so obviously seen. So there, in a sense, you observe a discontinuity in the shift vector, which was, for instance, interpreted or used in this model by the Canadian group by observing shocks in the model after the bounce. And it was also discussed in a model by the other Canadian group that maybe one should not interpret this kind of shocks they have in their model as a discontinuity in the metric, but rather as a discontinuity in the clock field. And if we now have the underlying mimetic model available where the mimetic field is the clock, we can, in a sense, ask the same question. Do we see shocks? Are there ways of maybe gluing solutions such that shocks occur? And what does it mean for the continuity of our clock field? How many minutes do I have left? Okay. Yeah, so maybe that's then my last slide. We see that these solutions have a different global structure, and we can see this by looking at geodesics at x equal to constant. And since the mimetic field is basically inducing our slicing, these are also the word lines of this mimetic field. Now, if we stay in Schwarzschild-like coordinates here, we basically see that if we choose a geodesic at one fixed x value, the dark blue line here, and we choose another geodesic at a larger x value, then after the bounce, those will cross. Now, if we consider tau and z coordinates, we see that all the blue geodesics for different values of x will not intersect. What is intersecting here is, in a sense, the mirrored curve here in orange. And it means that the blue lines do not intersect. So there is a smooth world line for the mimetic field, but it intersects with the orange line. And this is, again, due to the fact that the solution in terms of R was depending on Z square. So in this sense, this choice of coordinates is not sensitive to the sign of Z, whereas the other choices of coordinates are. And this means I have in LTB coordinates basically always two points which map to the same point in tau R coordinates. And if we now compare the model, the initial value problem would basically favor that we have a smooth clock field and we would just follow the blue line. And if you want to mimic basically this kind of crossing of word lines that you see in these coordinates, you would need to follow the blue line up to the bounce and then glue to the orange line and follow here, which means, which can be done, but it's rather unnatural because it means you violate the smoothness of the clock field without being forced to it. So that's a bit the difference. And here we have it in TX coordinates where you see that the world lines are just constant lines. And also you see only the blue lines do not cross each other, but only blue and orange lines. So in a sense, we see here also that the solution which is favored from the initial value problem without any junction condition used is basically having not violating the smoothness and then we don't see shocks. But if you want to force some smoothness into the model, then of course shocks could be allowed. So that's a bit the link we found. Yeah, and maybe I will just put up the summary, but since I'm -5 now, I will just leave it there and thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you for talking. We have time for a couple of questions. There's no students asking questions, and please go ahead.
Yeah, I got a bit lost in the shock story. So initially, we can't make the point if you have from inhomogeneous initial profiles, you have shocks.
Yes, we would agree to, yeah.
And your second part was, but sometimes it's a coordinate artifact or not?
Yeah, for so Oppenheimer, Schneider is homogeneous. So and there, using LTB coordinates, in a sense, we don't see the shocks. But as you also see, if you switch coordinates, the dynamical equations look quite different. And I think the one of the motivations to look for weak solutions, which then also allow shocks, was really the more complicated system of equations they had in PG coordinates.
Okay, so
the
second part is for homogeneous.
Yeah, so Oppenheimer, Schneider.
Okay.
Yeah. And for inhomogeneous, we also expect to have shell crossing singularities that they can't be avoided.
Okay, so that you would always expect.
I mean, we have to check, of course, in detail, but from the first investigations we did, we also see shell crossing singularities. And there's also a new paper by Ed and collaborators where they also see this.
I'm looking at that.
Other more questions?
So, you were mentioning that the functions for implementing quantum corrections are quite general. Have there been any other quantum corrections not from LQC that have been implemented in a similar way than you did?
Yes, I mean, not in the papers I was talking about, but this is in a sense work in progress. So for instance, you could ask for other regular matrix like Haybert or Bardeen, where they basically also modify the denominator.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can ask, is it possible to find functions such that you can embed them into this formalism? And that's something we are looking at currently. So this is work in progress. But yeah, that would be the idea. I mean, we so far did this investigation because we could link to models which were already there. And then we could compare properties and insights. But in principle, it's something I wrote here on the last slide, which I wasn't able to talk about. This would be an idea to use the formalism for. Like, consider more general parameterizations, not necessarily LQG inspired.
Thank you.
I mean, there are also some polymerizations where you put inverse trial corrections at positions in the Hamiltonian which are not covered by our formalism. But that would be something you couldn't analyze. But of course, you can always do it by hand for each model that you are interested in and consider the stability. But the nice thing is, once you have all these generic functions and your model can be embedded, then you just have to check the condition and not do everything from scratch.
Thanks.
Are there any more questions? Doesn't seem to be the case. So let's thank Christina again for the next
time. Thank you.